So we are holding. We are holding. We're about to start on Kuf Ayin Amud Bay. Kuf Ayin Amud Aleph, rather. About 15 lines from the bottom line. So we started a discussion yesterday. We had a braisa saying that if you have a case where a person claims he has a chazaka on a field for at least 3 years, plus he says he has a shtar, by which he bought the field. So we said that Rebbe holds you judge according to the shtar, and Rav Shimon Gamliel says you judge according to chazaka. So we started discussing several possibilities what that machlokes means. What are they arguing about, and what's the underlying point of their machlokes? So we went through a few possibilities. The last one we mentioned is they may be arguing about a point called If you have two people, if you have, for example, Malva and a Loiva, where the Loiva admits that this is in fact originally a valid shtar, that it's not forged or any such thing, but the question is, he's claiming I paid it off, or he's claiming that I dropped it and you found it, or whatever. Do we require the Malva to be Makayim that shtar? Does he still have to go and bring the agent to certify that these are their valid signatures to establish that it's a valid shtar before he can do anything? We started saying that since if Rebbe is saying in this braisa that we quoted yesterday, Nidin b'shtar, that you can judge based on the shtar, that implies, in other words, Rebbe is saying you're good as it is. You don't need to be mekayim the shtar. You're already able to use the shtar as is to collect. Whereas Reb Shimon Gamliel would hold that unless you can be mekayim the shtar, you can't do that. You have to look at chazaka. The problem with that, we said, is we had a discussion in Bava Metzia where it turned out the other way around, where we said there that Rebbe holds you would need to be mekayem to shtar, and Rav Shimon Gamliel would say that you don't need to. So the last thing we said yesterday was we said the Gemara offered that epoch. You have to flip around the opinions in Bava Metzia over there and say that Rebbe would be the one who says that you don't need to be mekayem it, which would comport with our braisa over here, and Rav Shimon Gamliel would say that you do. We haven't had it any time. I don't think we've had it any time that recently. Yeah, Kuf Nun Dalet, actually, you're right. Okay, I was away then. So I'm kind of,
you were,
of course, you remember. Okay, good. Okay. So anyway, the Boise, but now the Gemara says, so that's we're holding the line begins with Kaimo, about 15 lines from the end of the Amud. You could also answer that you don't need to flip around anything after all, because you could answer that Rebbe and Reb Shimon Gamliel are arguing over the question of to be mevarer, to clarify, to validate your argument. In other words, what's the situation over here? The person is saying that I have two reasons for which I have proof that I have this field. Number one, I have chazaka, and number two, I still have the shtar, even though normally you're not expected to keep your shtar after 3 years. In this case, I actually have mine. Now, so he's saying I have a shtar. The question is, do we require him to bring that evidence to Beis Din? Once he mentioned that he has that kind of evidence available, do we require him to bring it to Beis Din and let's actually look into it? Or do we say that no, the fact is he didn't have to mention a shtar at all. He could have just mentioned chazaka and brought his eidei chazaka, and that by itself would have been enough. So we discount the fact that he mentioned the shtar. Very nice. We're not worried about. We don't have to check into your shtar. So in which case it comes out, by the way, all the previous answers, we were all saying that Rebbe was being more makel than Reb Shimon Gamliel. We were saying that you don't need to bring your eidei chazaka. You can just bring your shtar that you have right now, and we'll consider it valid. Now we're taking a new tack on it. Now, if I care, we're saying Rebbe would be the one who's machmir. Rebbe would say, even though it's true that the shtar is not in and of itself essential to your case because you have chazaka, nonetheless, once you volunteer the information that you have a shtar, then we, Beis Din, are going to require you to bring it.
Why?
Why
can't we let him?
Why
do we have to choose for him?
Because we're saying the fact is he mentioned that he has a shtar. And actually, the fact of the matter is that Rashbam explains, remember, chazaka doesn't work without a tayin. So in this case, you have the other guy arguing, I never gave you the shtar. You never actually bought me the field. But that's the thing. So he's tayining that I have a chazaka. So again, if he had no shtar at all, we would say, okay, you bring your Eidei Chazaka. Your Eidei Chazaka are based on the fact that you're claiming you bought this character with a shtar. Fine, the other guy's claiming he never sold it to you, but you have a taina, you have a chazaka, good. However, in this case, you yourself are saying that you have a shtar, and the other guy is saying that this shtar I never gave to you, then you're going to be obligated, we're going to require you bring that shtar, and let's actually see what the facts are. Let's see if the shtar substantiates what you said.
But why can't you say, you know what, which proof do you want to use?
According to Rav Shimon Gamliel, you can say that. According to Rebbe, you can't. Once he himself mentioned,
why?
But according to Rebbe, once he said that he has a shtar,
yeah.
then we consider, then it's the equivalent of saying that his chazaka depends on that shtar, that his chazaka depends on that shtar. No shtar, no chazaka. Therefore, ultimately, if it had been within 3 years, he would have to bring his shtar to say, and even after 3 years, if it's chazaka she'eni mataina, then it's not a chazaka. Once he himself mentions that he has that shtar, then that becomes part of his taina. His taina is not just, I bought this character from you more than 3 years ago and I bought my shtar. His taina is, I bought this character from you and I still have that shtar. Fine. To substantiate his taina, he has to bring that shtar. That's what Rebbe holds. That's how we're going to explain it now. As in fact, we have a related case, a case where, again, it's not going to be the same kind of thing as far as a shtar, but a similar concept where you have an argument that maybe you weren't required to bring the halacha, but nevertheless, we're going to see that once you mention it, then you're going to be required to substantiate it. And it goes as follows. It happened once, Rabbi Yitzchak bar Yosef was owed money by Rabbi Abba. And by the way, the Gemara mentions in Sota that Rav Abba, this isn't the only person he owed money to, apparently. The Gemara mentions in Sota that Rav Abahu, at one point, the Bnei HaYeshiva wanted to appoint Rav Abahu as the next Rosh Yeshiva, and he told them instead, no, appoint Rav Abba, because he has many people, he has many creditors, he has many people he owes money to. This way, if he becomes Rosh Yeshiva, Gadleo Mishal Achav, everybody will give him money as part of the process of being appointed Rosh Yeshiva. He needs to be Gadleo Mishal Achav, he needs to be richer than everybody else, and therefore that'll help him get out of the hole that he's in. He was at least as great in Torah as Rav Abahu, but he may have been greater. We don't know. But whatever it is, Rav Abahu felt that Rav Abba is worthy enough for the position, and this way it'll help him get out of his financial problems.
That
is in Sota.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay.
Leadership.
Yeah. So Rav Yitzchak bar Yosef was owed money by Rav Abba. Also, the Kamei Rav Yitzchak Nafa. So they brought the case to Rav Yitzchak Nafa, Omar, and Rav Abba says, "Prat Yisub Lifnei Pliny or Pliny. I already paid you back in front of Pliny and Pliny." Now, the important point of here is it's not essential for him to say that I paid you in front of Pliny and Pliny. Technically, he could have just said "Prat Yisub," I paid you, and that would be enough of a taina by itself. That's why this comes in over here, because we're saying now he mentioned Lifnei Pliny or Pliny. By the way, I mean the obvious question is, both Rav Abba and Rav Yitzchak bar Yosef are both Amoroyim. Neither of them is going to be dishonest in business, Chas v'Shalom. How comes it Rav Yitzchak bar Yosef is claiming a debt and Rav Abba is claiming he paid it already? Is there some untruth over here? So the Tosfos read and Rav Yaakov Emden talk about not necessarily, in particular we learned back in Bava Metzia that Talmid Chachamim sometimes, because they're so busy with their learning, they can forget about such things. But also Rav Yaakov Emden goes on to say, this may have been a milval pet. So therefore, now what may have happened? Rav Abba may have paid it. Rav Abba presumably paid it back. He's saying he paid it back. We have to take him at his word. But Rav Yitzchak bar Yosef may have overlooked it. He may have forgotten about it. And it was a milval pet. There's no shtar to look at. There's a very famous Yerushalmi story of somewhat along the same lines of an askam there in Yerushalayim who borrows money from somebody for Yom Tov expenses and he pays him back and the guy forgets it, and then the whole case. That's actually, now that I think of it, another more relevant story maybe is another story that involves somebody borrowing money from a Rav and then he comes and pays it back and the Rav puts it between the pages of the safer and afterwards he can't find it, et cetera. This could have been the same kind of thing. Anyway. So Rabbi Yitzchak says, okay, if you're saying that you paid me in front of Pliny and Pliny, fine, you're going to Pliny and Pliny via Edu. Fine, then bring those two Plinys, bring those two Edim, and let them give Edus. Amalei, so Rabbi Abba says, why should I have to? Eloi also loy mehamnina. What are you telling me? If those Edim don't show up, then you're not going to believe me? That you're not going to believe me to say that I paid without Edim? But we know the din is even if you lend somebody money in the presence of Edim, you're not obligated to pay him back in the presence of Edim, unless the guy specifically says, I want you to pay me back in front of Edim or whatever.
You got that?
Yeah. Well, we may have discussed it briefly. The main Sovyanit, yeah, we did briefly. The main Sovyanit is in Shavuot. We'll get there in half a year or so.
Well, we all remember learning it.
Okay. Omalei, so Rabbi Yitzchak answers, Ano bahi kishmait demarisvirle. No, actually, when it comes to that detail, he says, I hold in as far as that particular din goes, I hold like the statement of my Rebbe. The Omer of Abba, maybe it's the same Rebbe Abba, I don't know. Omer of Abba Ba'Abba, Omer Rab. That's not the point. No, Rabbi Yitzchak is saying, I hold according to what Rabbi Abba said in the name of Rabbi Abba Ba'Abba, who said in the name of Rab, that that if you say, I paid you back in front of Pliny and Pliny, in other words, if you say, I did have Edus, so that I paid you back, then you have to have Pliny and Pliny come and be made. So I'm arguing on that basis. Rav said that din. I hold like that din. Therefore, you are, once you met, now it's true, if you hadn't mentioned Edom at all, then Taka, of course, you're not obligated to bring them. Hey, you yourself mentioned that you have Edim, that you paid me back, though. According to what Rav is saying, you're obligated to bring those Edim. Amalei, so Rav Abba asks him, V'ha'amar of Gidol Amar Rav Halacha Kedivir of Shimon Gamliel, but, and this is how this is relevant to our story over here, didn't Rav Gidol say in the name of Rav that in our discussion before about Nidin B'Shtar and Nidin B'Chazaka, the Halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel? Now, we just finished saying the last explanation of what Rebbe and Rav Shimon Gamliel are arguing about is they're arguing over this point when you mentioned something extra that was not needed for your essential claim. You mentioned that you have a Shtar plus you have Chazaka, where all you would have needed is Chazaka together with Edi Chazaka. Then Rav Shimon Gamliel was saying you're not obligated to bring your Shtar and validate it and based in. We can ignore the shtar and just focus on your Eidei Chazaka. So by the same logic, in other words, I didn't need to say that I have Eidim. The fact is, I would be believed to say that I paid you back even without Eidim. Therefore, the fact that I mention Eidim shouldn't require me to bring those Eidim to Beis Din. And according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, and he continues, to ask Rebbe, even Rebbe, who's saying that you do need to bring the shtar. Rav Abba is saying, doesn't mean that he's actually arguing with Rav Shimon Gamliel and saying, if you don't bring the shtar, then we will throw your case out of Beis Din. Ask Rebbe, like Omar, El Levarer. Even Rebbe is only saying that you need to do it, Levarer, because once you made a claim, fine, you should bring that evidence to Beis Din, but not necessarily that it means that if I don't bring that evidence, that therefore that my...
I should bring it.
No, not necessarily. In fact, the Maharshal explains that, for example, we may mean that, first of all, we'll talk about this, Machlokes Rishonim, what we mean over here, let's finish the Gemara and then we'll talk what the actual halacha is, but Maharshal points out the practicality of it is, first of all, it might be that you should bring that evidence, Lofus Yidei Shemayim, once you made a claim, and fine, to be Yotze, the Eidishtes Cheshbin, you should be bringing that evidence to Beis Din. If you don't, well, that's what we'll talk about in a second. But Rav Abba is understanding it to mean that even Rebbe is not saying that you actually have to bring it, just that it would be the right thing to do, but not that if you don't bring it, then we're going to throw your case out of court. And also, Marshall points out the logic of it might be, for example, let's say a person claims that he paid back with Edim. Fine, make him bring the Edim because that may induce him to tell the truth. If, for example, let's say, he doesn't know after all, the Edim may come and disagree with what he says. Or he may say, you know what, never mind, I can't find the Edim, so you know what, fine, I'll just give in and pay it. But it doesn't mean Rav Abba is arguing that I should have to bring the Edim, and without that, my claim is going to be thrown out. Omalei, so Rav Yitzchak answers him, Ano nami levara kamina. No, but that's true, but I hold like Rebbe, and I understand Rebbe to be saying levara. However, that actually means, this is how Rashbam explains it, that Rebbe means to say you have to bring it in order to validate your claim, and if you don't, then we will throw out your claim. Once you mention, in the case of the field, for example, once you mention that you have chazaka and you have a shtar, if you're not going to bring that shtar, then we will throw your argument out, and we'll say that your shtar, you didn't bring your shtar, and your chazaka, therefore, is invalid because it's based on that shtar. Hmm. Same way, Rabbi Yitzchak is arguing, you're understanding Rebbe to say that you should bring in, that you should bring these aid in, but it's not essential if you don't. I understand Rebbe to be saying that you have to bring those Edim, and if you don't, then it means we have to ignore your claim. It means then you don't have a valid claim, and you have to pay me back. That's how Rashbam understands it. Tosfos argues on that on several different grounds, and Tosfos explains that the question is who is the halacha like anyway? Is it like Rebbe or like Rebbe Shimon Gamliel? So we just said in the Gemara halacha kedivrei Rebbe Shimon Gamliel, and even Rebbe is only saying Mabarak. Well, that's what we just said. You have to do it in order to clarify your argument. And Rav Abba understood that to mean that it means you should do it, but it's not required to. And Rav Yitzchak is countering that no, it means you're required and you have to. So the gears that we have here is the halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel anyway. In which case, Rav Abba has a point. And just like Rav Shimon Gamliel said in the Braisa, you can base yourself on the halacha. So also, he would say over here, you can base yourself on the agent. However, Tosfos has a number of problems with that, and Tosfos says that no, even when we say over here anonami levara kamina, he doesn't mean it. Rebbe does not mean, and Rebbe Yitzchok does not mean that Rebbe means that if you don't bring those adim, then that's it. Your taina is void. He means the same thing as what you, Rebbe Abba, are saying. You're right. I don't mean you must bring those adim, and if not, then we will throw out your claim. I just mean you should bring those adim if you have them. If you don't, then fine. We'll continue without the agent. Your claim may still be acceptable. We'll do as we would usually do when you claim when you claim that you paid back, which is minatora nothing because you claim for hassle midrabanon. You would swear a sure thing.
Said that what applies to
the 80 would apply to the Shtar. So there are some Rishonim who the Rashba points out that many of the Rishonim point out, in fact, Tosfos points out over here, there is a Gemara over there, that there is a Gemara in Masechta Shavuos that talks about a somewhat similar case, but there's a wrinkle, namely, what if the Edim come and contradict what he says? They say, you didn't pay us back, and you didn't pay him back in our presence. And Rava says over there, nevertheless, it's still okay because they weren't obligated to see it, so therefore they may not remember it. Over here in Agamara, it sounds like we're saying at least according to Rebbe Levara, meaning at least you need to bring them, and if they contradict you, then you're out. So the Rashba explains what you're saying, that there may be a difference between a shtar and chazaka, where the chazaka depends on the shtar, versus paying back a loan, where the payment of a loan does not in and of itself depend on there being agent there or not. So there is that logical reason to make that distinction between our Gemara and the Gemara in Shavuos. There's a few other answers. Another possibility is the Gemara in Shavuos may go according to the Shimon Gamliel, and you were talking according to Rebbe, or it may be that there's a difference. The Baal Amara talks about there's a difference in that Gemara you're talking about. You actually invited, in our Gemara you're talking about, you actually invited the Edim to come and observe the payment. You actually asked them, be Edim on this, as opposed to over there, not necessarily. They may just have happened to be there. On top of all of that, you have a machlokas rishonim, whether in the end the halacha is like Rebbe or Rav Shimon Gamliel in our Gemara over here. You have, again, with the girsa that we have over here, is the halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel, and then the Rashbam says so. A number of the other rishonim say no, that the halacha is like Rebbe. So the bottom line halacha, as brought in Shulchan Aruch, is that you have the Mechaber and the Ramah argue over the... So it's like this. The final halacha, as brought in Shulchan Aruch, is, if the Edim, you are supposed to bring the Edim. If the Edim didn't come, fine, we'll continue without the Edim. We'll consider as if there weren't any Edim to begin with, and we'll continue from there. We'll do according to the usual rules of Kofer Hakol, the Modim Mikvah, etc. If the Edim come and contradict him, then according to the Mechaber, if you invited them to come there, if you asked them to be Edim on it, and now they come and contradict you, then we don't believe you. If you didn't specifically ask them to come, they just happened to be there, and now later on and based in their saying you didn't, then not necessarily does that show that you're a liar, because after all, like the Gemara says over there in Shavuos, like Rava says over there in Shavuos, you weren't obligated to be an aid on it, therefore you're not necessarily
right.
Your memory may be faulty. If you know that you're an aid on something, you're going to remember, but otherwise you're not necessarily going to. And the Ramah disagrees with that and says that, regardless whether you invited them or not, either way, if they contradicted you, then we throw your argument out of court, and then that's it. Then otherwise, though, if we say we believe him, means again he has to swear Shavuos Hatzis.
Right. So how do you apply that to the our case of Shtar?
So our case of Shtar and Chazaka.
You have to define the Shtar.
So if we're saying in the end that the halacha is like Rebbe, then yes, it means you're saying you have a shtar, then yes, you should be bringing that shtar to Beis Din and be mekayem. if you can't, if you can't, if for whatever reason between when you made that claim and when you and when you're coming to Beis Din, if after that the shtar is unavailable anymore, or for whatever reason you can't bring it, fine, we'll set that aside and we'll continue arguing on the basis of chazaka and see whether do you have your eidus chazaka or not. If you have your eidus chazaka, you're good. If not, then not. Mishnah says, Misha Parta Mikta Chayva, if somebody paid back part of his debt. Now here we're talking a milvah b'shtar. Now, one possibility you can do is you could, as we said in the previous Mishnah, you could give the shtar to a shlish, you can give the shtar to a third party, to a trusted third party, and he'll hold on to it, and then at the end, eventually you'll pay back the rest of the shtar, and then it'll be taken and ripped up. Let's say you don't want to do that. Let's say you don't have a shlish available for that purpose. What do we do then to prevent the malva from trying to collect the whole debt again? Rabbi Yehuda says what you do is you replace the shtar. What you do is rip up the original shtar, write a new shtar with the remaining amount. What do you date the new shtar? That you have a big machlokas rishonim based on different understandings of the Gemara, as we're going to see. Whether Rabbi Yehuda, the Rashbam says that you write it as of the original date. And Tosfos discusses various Tosfos and other Rishonim discuss various possibilities whether, in fact, Rabbi Yehuda is saying you write it as of the original date or as of the current date. The original date of the original loan.
Yeah.
So you borrowed money in Nissan. You paid part of it back in Iyar. Now, when you're writing a new shtar, according to Rabbi Yehuda, are you dating a new shtar Nissan or are you dating an Iyar? The svarat the date at Iyar would be, as we'll see in the Gemara, because otherwise it looks like you're doing a shtar muktam. Otherwise, you're writing an Iyar. How are you writing a shtar dated Nissan? But what are you writing as the date on the top of the shtar? Are you writing the current date, but the thing is, it also depends who's writing the new shtar. Are the Edim writing it or is Beis Din writing it? That also makes a difference, as the Tosfos discusses at some length based on the Gemara. Because Beis Din, fine, has the ability to do that, maybe. Not necessarily do the Edim have the ability to do that. What?
How can you revisit?
You're going to revisit the past.
You're in the present, you have to write today's date.
But on the other hand, the Shibud Taka began from the original date. Well, that's what we'll see.
And if today's date, you should write that she would start it on such a date.
No, because the original loan of 100 was taken out in Nissan. Therefore, that's when the Shibud started. But now that you paid back 50 of it, on the face of it, the Shibud should continue from then. But let's see. We'll see in the Gemara, and we'll talk about it as we go along. Well, I mean, but which one is the one who's actually writing it? And ultimately, Aiden have to sign it, but ultimately, who is the one in charge of writing it? If they're based in or Aiden, yeah. Anyway, so Rabbi Yehuda says Yachlis, that you replace the shtar with a new one. Rabbi Yossi says no. What you do is you keep the original document and you write out a receipt for that amount that was paid off, and the lawyer will have to hold on to the receipt. Rabbi Yehuda says that's a problem. If you're going to make him write a receipt, and from now on the lawyer has to hold on to it, nimtzeh zetzarich liyos shomer shoyver min achbarim. Then that means from now on the lawyer is going to forever have to guard this receipt so that mice don't eat it.
What's the problem?
Well, how can you put such a thing out?
Keeping the shtar. So
yeah, but that's what Rabbi Yehuda is arguing. Wouldn't it be better to write a new shtar for the remaining 50, let's say, and that way there's no possibility that the malva will. That way there's no possibility that the shoyver will get lost and the malva is going to end up recollecting all of it. Amalei Rabbi Yossi. So Rabbi Yossi answers him, kach yafalai. Fine. But that is the right way it should be. Now, what does that mean? The Rashbam explains it's better off for the malva this way. Sure, fine. Let the loiva have the worry of watching his shoyver, rather than the malva have the problem of having a new shtar with a different shibud on it. The Ramban disagrees with that explanation. He says kach yofel means the loiva is better off this way, because if you make the malva write a new shtar, and the Ramban understands it to mean that if there's a new date, it means the malva may not be willing. First of all, the malva may not be willing to do that. He may say to the loiva, never mind, I don't want only half payment right now. I want you to all or nothing, and that's not good. The loiva has finally managed to raise some money and then should be able to pay it now, and then you should give him the chance to pay it back without the malva having a problem with it. Second of all, also, that Amban says, besides, also, if you make it difficult, if you make it too difficult for the Malva to collect at all, then he may noyal delos with neleven. You're going to lock the door in front of people who want to borrow. So therefore, kafi upper lo that Amban understands means it's better off for the loiver this way. Yes, you have a point that now he has a shoiver to watch. On the other hand, it's better in the long term because he'll more likely be able to borrow money in the future. Rather than ruining the Malva's koyach. Now, what do we mean ruining the Malva's koyach? If we go according to the Rishonim, we say that the new shtar is written at the second date, then obviously you're ruining his koyach, because now he doesn't have a shibud as at the first date. If you say, like the Rashbam and like some of the explanations in Tosfos, that you write the original date, then the Yera Koycha Shalzeh, it's still, there's a number of things, as we'll see in the Gemara. We'll see that the Gemara has a statement, Kedesha Yoko Kopardei, and we'll see a few different possibilities what it means. One of them being that if the whole loan is outstanding, then the loiver is more likely to feel under pressure to pay it back to you. For example, if he only pays back part of it and leaves some of it unpaid, he may figure it's only a few bucks, I'm not going to bother. Or also that Amban points out an idea like this: if he has a large loan outstanding against him, then it kind of ruins his credit rating. People realize that he's borrowed money, and therefore it makes it easier eventually for the Malva to collect, because this guy feels under pressure. He can't sell his stuff at full price because everybody knows he's desperate, etc. Therefore, Rabbi Yossi is arguing that it's better that we keep an outstanding shtar that makes it look as if he still owes 100, even though in reality he only owes 50, and whenever Malva tries to claim 100, he'll pull out his shoiver for 50, but this way at least the belt thinks that he still owes 100, and therefore he'll feel under more pressure to pay sooner. That's what Rabbi Yossi is arguing.
The truth that he's paid off
is the shoiver, according to Rabbi Yossi. Whereas according to Rabbi Yehuda, we would say we rip up the shtar and write a new shtar of 50. Then he may figure, okay, 50, big deal. You know, I'm not in such a hurry to pay that back. The Ran, I think, adds another svara as well. That this way, he may feel that I can pay back in dribs and drabs. I'll pay back a dollar here, a dollar there, and that's not right. That's not a right way to pay back a loan. So like this, when he knows there's still an outstanding document against him for 100, he'll feel more under pressure to pay the whole thing at once, the way he should.
Okay.
You want to assume to make the code just like a...
No, a shiver doesn't make as much code, does it? No.
One word for Leva that he should watch it for the mice. I mean, Malva has to watch it for the mice the whole time. Why is he...
Fine, but that's how it has to be. I mean, who else is supposed to have the shtag?
Malva's a nice guy here, so...
Okay.
Why should we care to raise the Leva to the level of Malva? It's not going to make it worse.
The Malva, there's no choice. You have to have a shtar, so therefore, of necessity, you're going to have to guard it from mice. Rabbi Yehuda is saying, why should we put that burden on the loiva as well? Especially as the Gemara is going to talk about, but after all, I mean, you know, it's true, you have on both sides. You don't want, for example, the shtar gets lost and then the Malva is going to illegally collect the whole thing again. You also don't want the shtar shtar is going to be lost and then the loiva is going to illegally retain the money and never pay it back. It's true, but, Rabbi Yehuda to figure like this: if you write a new shtar, then you're covered. There's no chance the Malva is going to be able to collect the whole thing, and this way at least you're taking a burden off the loiva, which otherwise he wouldn't have to have. The Malva is going to have that burden of l'shem minach borim either way. That can't be helped.
It's just like a level playing field.
Okay, but nevertheless, though, I don't know. Okay, so the Gemara says Amar Rav Huna Amar Rav. Ein halacha lo k'Rav Yehuda v'lo k'Rav Yosi. Actually, though, the Rav says the halacha is neither like Rav Yehuda nor like Rav Yosi. Now, how is Rav and Amora able to argue with them? So the obvious answer is, okay, Rav Tanahu Poli, we find the Rashbam says, Rav is a Tanah, he's able to argue with other Tanahs. However, he's basically an Amora, but to a certain extent he's part of the transitional generation between them. There are other Rishonim, I think the Ritva says that what it means is he had the Kabbalah from his Rebbeim that the other Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yochanan Wasserman brings a very interesting thing that he once asked this question to Rabbi Chaim Soloveitcher. He asked, how do you have over here? I mean, we know, for example, Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with Rav all the time, as we will have examples in the Gemara later. Obviously, he didn't hold Rav at the time. Now, what would he say over here? And Rabbi Chaim answered him, in general, when we say that Tanoim don't disagree with Amiroyim, it's not they're not allowed to. It's they generally don't because they know that Tanoim know more than they do. They know Yeridus Adurdus, Miskatno Emma, Rashonim Kamalachim, Onim Kibriadam, etc. Therefore, once they know what the Tanoim said on a certain topic, they're not going to disagree with it. But every rule has exceptions. If a Tanoim knows what the Tanoim, if an Amora knows what the Tanoim said, and yet he has the break type to argue with them, fine. Then he has the ability to.
But that's not accepted.
It's not usual, but that you have an
Gemara.
That's not standard understanding, but that's how the time really goes. Understood. Okay.
How can you say that?
Because that's what we're saying. When we slug up an Amora based on Tanoim, it means if he had realized what the Tanoim say on it, he never would have said what he said. But like this, you can have Rav knows what it says in the Mishnah, and yet he's arguing with them with full knowledge that he's arguing.
Rav is really the only one.
Okay.
Not even Shmuel.
Yeah.
No, but I think
also
Chia.
Anyway,
he's not a
Tana. No, but he, to a certain extent, he is. To a certain extent, he is. Rav Tana who follows.
If
okay.
You saw
anyway,
let's
call
it
okay.
You to a certain extent. Either he's a Tana.
No, he's an Amora, but he's also a Tana.
He's not an Amora.
He's both. He's both. He's from the transitional generation.
My comment.
Okay.
If you saw him, you were thinking of a
Tana. Okay. Come on, let's continue. So, Ein Halacha Loi Krabi. Yes, you can. Ein Halacha Loi Krabi Yehuda Veloi Krabi. Ella. No, so what does Rav say? Based in Mekarin Ashtar, based in are the ones who rip up the Shtar, because the Shtaracham is Man Rishon, and they write him a new Shtar as of the original date. Amalei Rav Nachman Rav Huna, so Rav Nachman asked Rav Huna, Va'amri Rav Yumi Ba'aba Rav Huna, or others say Rav Yumi Ba'aba asked Rav Huna, Ishniela L'Rav Ha Braisa. Now you should know, if Rav had heard the following Braisa, which we're going to quote one line of it now, and then we're going to quote the rest of it later in the Sugya, the Tanya, which we learn in a Braisa, Edim B'Karin Es Ashtar, the Edim are the ones who rip up the Shtar, not like Rav is saying the Beis Din rips it up, because when the Shtar Acham is Man Rishon, and they write him a new Shtar as of the first date, if Rav had known of that Braisa, have a Hodebe, he would have retracted his statement. He would have agreed the Halacha is like Rabbi Huda. Now, why is that? The Rashbam says, because Rav is saying basically the same thing, all Rav is saying is that Beis Din are the ones who rip up the Shtar rather than and write a new one, rather than the Edim. Big deal, the Rashbam says. That's not really enough of a reason for Rav to disagree with Rabbi Huda. If he had known that Rabbi Huda says that in the Braisa, then he would have then he would have agreed with that. Which means, by the way, also, so Tosfos discusses at some length over here that what it means is, in other words, the premise of Rav Nachman's question, or the premise of Rav Nachman or Rabbi Yirmiyahu Ba'aba's question, is that Rav didn't know necessarily that Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah is saying that you write the second shtar as of the original date. He thought that Rabbi Yehuda means you write it as of the new date, as of the current date when you're writing the replacement shtar. Therefore, he's disagreeing with that. But if he had known that, so Rav would say that you write it as of the original date. If he had known, then the Braiser of Yehuda spells out and says that you write it as of the original date, he would have agreed with that. But Tosfos also discusses that various other possibilities that the Braiser is saying, Rabbi Yehuda says that Davka, that the Edim have to do it, which means, in other words, Rav would not necessarily have said that Beis Din have to do it. He would have, if he had known of this Braiser, he might have agreed with Rabbi Yehuda that it's good enough if the Edim do it, etc. Anyway, Amalei, so Rav Huna answers, no, don't think Rav didn't know of this Braisa. Rav knew of this Braisa good and well, and yet he didn't retract from his opinion. He still held his opinion differently than what it says in this Braisa. Because, he argues, Bishlema Beidina, because I can understand a Beis Din, Alimi Lafkui Mamona, a Beis Din is powerful enough to be able to take out money, meaning when you get down to it, when you're writing the new Shtar, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it, by right, you would think that the new shtar should be written as of the current date. Because how can you write a shtar now and predate it? And then create a shibud where there wasn't one before. Based in fine, Hefker based in Hefker. They have the ability to do that. Therefore we can argue that based in
to go back in time,
basically. Ella Edim Sha'ot Shlichosan Chosen Voice and Shlichosan. But if you're going to argue that Edim can write a new shtar, what do you mean? Once the Edim have completed their original shlichos of writing and signing on a new shtar, who gave them the koyach to go and to go and do another one?
Based
in his hefker, based in hefker. Yeah. Tosfos discusses another issue though. Tosfos says, I mean, so after all, why takanas? I mean, and actually Tosfos says, what does it mean? And are we implying that if the Edom never did their shlichus, if they hadn't written the original shtar, they would be able to write a second shtar? Adrabe, if the whole point is they can't predate a shtar, doesn't really matter whether they wrote an original shtar or not. Why are we talking in terms of only because they wrote a first shtar, does that disqualify them from writing a second shtar? So Tosfos discusses Tosfos says Tosfos discusses that question, and they say actually the Lashon of the Gemara is not really so precise over here, but they explain the Gemara to be saying that how do Edim have the power, exactly, how do Edim have the power to go back in time? How do Edim, and not really to go back in time, to write a shtar that's predated, where right now you're an Iyar and you're writing it as Nissen, that seems like writing a shtar mukdam. That seems like writing a predated shtar. So how do Edim have the ability to do that? So that's the thing. So yes, the Braita says that the Edim write a new shtar. Rav is not obligated to agree with that. Rav can say that no, I don't believe the Edim have the power to do that. Basically, has the power.
It's a new shtar, but today's date.
But they would have to write today's date, and Rav wants to say that they're going to write the original date. Therefore, he would have to say that it's the Basin that does it. Okay, the question is, Veloy. So you're telling me that not? What do you mean? Once the Edom did their shlichus, you're telling me they're not allowed to do it again?
Yes.
But we find that Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Rav, suppose somebody's shtar was lost, which as we discussed a couple of blocks ago. Now, Tosfos points out, here we're talking about, let's say, that before it was he said it's lost, and we don't know. Did he actually lose it? Did he just misplace it? Is he hiding it in order to take it out later? Here we're talking about, let's say, that you have Edim that know for sure that it was lost. As Marshall pointed out the other day, if they know, for example, he lost it in the street, the chance of him finding it is very low. And if anybody else finds it, they're not allowed to return it to him as within the government team. Or you have Edim that it was burnt, whatever. So let's say in that case, so we know a new shtar has to be written. Those same Edim can write even 10 shtaras on one field. So they wrote one shtar. Later on, it got lost.
The shtar is predated?
No. They're predated.
Predated?
Because that's when he bought the property. And we're going to see later on, we're going to see on Amud Beis, we'll probably get to this part tomorrow, that in fact a shtar mecher, a shtar of sale, can't be predated or postdated, because that could create problems. So of necessity, it has to be written as of the original sale. And we're saying, so they wrote a shtar, then it got lost, and there's Edim that it got lost or burnt or whatever. They can write a new one and repeat the process as many times as necessary. So just we're saying. As of the original date. You're saying that once the Edom did their shlichus, then that's it, their shlichus is over, they can't write a new shtar without authorization, and here we see from this statement that they can. Fine, even if it's all the same day, it doesn't matter. The point is, according to what you just said, once they finish their first shlichus, that should be it.
In the case of what?
In the case of Shtarimecha, but it doesn't, well, we're going to see a second what case it is, but wait. The answer is Rabbi Yosef Amar B'Shtar Matana. The answer is Rabbi Yosef says, Edim do not have an ability to write a new shtar that will have the power to take away from other people, to take away from Lakuk. What kind of case? Shtar Matana, where Matana has no achrayus involved, where the only purpose of the shtar is to have proof that he actually owns the field, that they can write as many times as necessary. That their shlichus doesn't expire. But something where it's going to take away money from somebody else, like over here where we're talking about writing a new shtar choy for half the amount, that not necessarily.
The money was anyway.
But it's making a shibud. Fine, but there was a shibud before for the known, and now there's a shibud for the remaining amount. Fine, but I understand, but still, the original shtar is being ripped up, so therefore that's it. At that point, that shibud expires, and if you're going to make a new shibud predated, backdated to the original date, then it's like the Edim. As opposed to that Matana, there's no Achrayus, so therefore there's no nothing, yeah. But Rabba, Amar B'Shtar She'en Be'Achrayus, whereas Rabba says that we're talking about, it can even be a shtar mechira, but we're talking about a shtar that has no achrayus, that we talked about the other day. Either you explicitly say there's no achrayus or you don't write it. So it's similar to a matana in that sense, yeah. But not necessarily would they have the ability to do that when it comes to a shtar halva or shtar mecha that does have achrayus or whatever, where they're going to backdate it to the original date and create a shibud similar to the one of the original ripped up shtar, not necessarily to aid him have the power to do that. So again, Rabbi Yehuda may say that they do, but Rav is not obligated to agree with that. Wait,
that's the last
one. Hold on. Okay. My Braisa, okay, so what's this Braisa? We quoted one line of it before. Let's go through the whole Braisa now. The Tanya, how do you show your notion by Elif Zuz? Suppose that you had a person who owed 1,000 Zuz to somebody, and he paid off 500 of it. Edim makarin as a shtar, so we say the Edim rip up the original shtar, because from the shtar acham is man rishon, and This is a bribe that we're saying.
Yeah, but he proves that he's paid 500.
According to Rabbi Yehuda, which is who we're talking about, the proof is going to be the fact that we have a new shtar that says 500.
No, but at the time that he says para.
Para mehen chomesh mehezu. So what do we do in order that the malveh is not going to try to collect the whole 1,000 again? Makarin as a shtar, we rip up the original shtar of 1,000. Kotzvan le shtar acher, and we write him another shtar. Mizman rishon, from the original date, we backdate it to the original date, Dibur Rabbi Yehuda. Now, by the way, Tosfos points out that as we're going to go through, when we go through the Gemara over here, we're going to see the word Mizman Rishon is not part of the original Braisa. But since the Gemara knew in the end, Rabbi Yehuda does hold it's Mizman Rishon, and therefore the Gemara interpolated that into the Braisa. But really, the original Braisa, he just said that Edom write a new shtar. That he didn't say when, as of when they gave it.
Is that going to be disputed?
No, it's not going to be disputed. Well, you have Rishonim, again, you have Rishonim who argue that maybe on Mishnah and the Braisa may be disagreeing. There may be two different opinions within what Rabbi Yehuda says. Or it may be that in on Mishnah, maybe Rabbi Yossi is misunderstanding what Rabbi Yehuda says, as we're going to see in the Gemara in a second, that Rabbi Yossi isn't sure what exactly Rabbi Yehuda is saying, whether it's Man Rishon or Man Sheni, because again, it wasn't spelled out of the Braisa, and it wasn't spelled out in the Mishnah either. And you have a number of different approaches like that. Okay, so you rip up the shtar, because from the shtar acham is man rishin, you write a new shtar as of the original date, divir Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi, a shtar zeyei monach b'mekomer. Rabbi Yossi says no, you leave the original shtar where it is in the hands of the malveh, the yichtav u'shoiver, and you write a receipt for the 500. And he continues, v'mefnei shnei dvarim omru kois v'n shoiver. There are two reasons why we say that you should write a shoiver. Achas Kadesh Yaakov Kapore, number one, in order that the Malva will pressure the Loiva to pay him back. Namely, in other words, that the other 500. In other words, according to the Rashbam, the Yaakov is not really, it's not that Malva can actually be pressuring Loiva, it's the Loiva himself is going to feel the pressure because he knows the only thing that's preventing the Malva from taking the whole 1,000 from him is the Shoiver. So he's always worried, if I lose that shofar, I could end up having to pay back the whole thing. Therefore, he feels the pressure to pay back the other 500 as soon as possible, so that he'll get back the original shtar and be able to rip it up and have that off his back. Or again, we have the different explanations from the other Rishonim before, that a milva of a larger amount, you feel more pressure to pay off because it ruins your credit rating, or because you feel it's a huge, you know it's a huge amount as opposed to a little amount, that fine, he's not going to notice the difference, or whatever. Anyway.
You may never get back to the rating if you lost it. I mean, you may never go back to start. There is a possibility that
there is that possibility. I mean, here we're not talking about here we're not talking about that he says he lost it. But you're right. Now, I'll tell you, there is in the time of the Gaonim, they made a takana called Chayrim Stam. You can find it in a number of places in Rambam, in Sefer Kinyan, and Sefer Mishpatim. That the Gaonim came up with a concept that when you have a claim where there's not necessarily enough evidence to make the other guy swear and base it on it, for example, like here, you the loiver are claiming that the malva didn't lose the shtar, he's concealing it or whatever. What you can do is you can make cherem stam. You have the basin declare a cherem without naming any names, but anybody who has the chutzpah to hold on to their shtar in order to falsely claim collect it later and claim that it was lost should be in a cherem. And that will hopefully get the malva to admit that he, if he really is holding on to it.
Are there more cherem stam?
Yeah, there's a lot of cases. That Amma mentions a lot of cases. We have cherem stam like that. But it's not. You're saying
it's conditional.
If somebody,
if you're a liar, you're a cherem.
That's what it means, basically. It means
God knows.
The Eivishter knows the truth, whether you are or not, and therefore you should know you're in trouble. You should know you're in trouble with the Eivishter. You're not putting him in cherem. You're saying if you are guilty of this, then you will be in cherem, and you and the Eivishter will know the truth.
You're not.
That's all. It's meant as a form of social pressure.
It's not.
It won't mean.
Like the May Seder.
Yes. It won't mean that he's actually going to be in Chayrim as in other people can't be within his Dalet Amos or whatever, because you're right, it is a topic. But at least he'll know the truth. Maybe Eivishter will know the truth.
He'll know the truth. Every time he goes to shul, he's going to be like... Oh,
yeah, whatever. Anyway, then the Rambam also continues, by the way. If you, the loiva, are saying, I know it's not even a question of Shema, I know for a fact that he's holding on to that shtar and claiming that it's lost, then you can make him swear a shuah tefet. Anyway, other than that, not what we're saying over here. So therefore, so you write a shofar. But achas kadesh yigbim is man rishon. And number two, Rabbi Yossi is saying the reason to write a shofar is that way the malva can continue collecting as of the original date. He still has his shibud intact. So the question is, well, Rabbi Yehuda Nami is Manrishin Karma. What is Rabbi Yossi pointing out? Is Manrishin? Rabbi Yehuda himself said that that you can still collect Manrishin. In other words, the new shtar is written, is backdated to the original date. The answer is Hachik Karma Le Rabbi Yossi, Le Rabbi Yehuda. It means like this. In the Braisa, Rabbi Yossi is saying to Rabbi Yehuda as follows. I'm not sure what you yourself are saying. Is the replacement shtar, according to you, backdated to the original date, or is it dated as of now? Even is Manrishin Ka'amrath, if you're saying that it should be dated as of the original date, Palignaloch Bechada, then I disagree with you for one reason. It's true, fine, you're not worried about ruining his Shibud, because it still will be at the original date, but I hold it still better to write a Shaver, because that way he'll feel more pressure to pay back the rest of it, rather than thinking there's a new shtar out there for a lesser amount, I don't have to worry about it as much. The im is not shani ka'amrith, and on the other hand, if you're saying that you date the new shtar later, you date it as of when the new shtar is written, then I have two reasons to disagree with you. Number one, because of the first problem, because now you have less pressure to pay, and number two, because now you also damage the other guy's shibud. So in other words, Rabbi Yossi himself is not sure whether Rabbi Yehuda means Mizman Rishon or Mizman Sheni. And again, there are Rishonim who learn that in fact in the Mishnah maybe Rabbi Yehuda is saying Mizman Sheni, and only in the Braita is he saying Mizman Rishon.
Huh.
The halacha actually ends up being not like Taka, not like Rabbi Yehuda, but rather like Rav, which as we said, Beis Din are the ones who have to write a new shtar, not the Edim. However, the Beis Din writes it as Mizman Rishon because Beis Din has the koyach to be able to do that, to be able to backdate a shtar.
And this way, there's not the problem.
Of ruining the shibur, and that way you also don't have the problem of having to watch over a shibur. Now, we will have cases which we'll deal with in the Gemara. We will have cases where nevertheless the halacha is that a shibur is written. Those are other cases we'll deal with. Namely, for example, talk of the case where the malva says, I don't have the shtar chayv anymore. We'll deal with that. But at least for the case of our Mishnah, where the shtar chayv is in fact intact and we have it present, but we're arguing write a shover or write a new shtar, the halacha is you write a new shtar.
Based
in write the new shtar. Turn it up. We learn in a braisa. Shtar shez mane kosev b'Shabbos or b'Asara b'Tishrei. If you have a shtar that is dated on Shabbos or it's dated on the 10th of Tishrei, on Yom Kippur. Now, how does such a thing happen? You don't obviously sit down and write a shtar saying Shabbos. So the Rashbam explains, let's say, for example, that the shtar had a secular date written in it. Imagine, for example, you have a shtar dated October 1st, and then you look up on the calendar and you find that year, October 1st, was Yom Kippur. Tosfos gives a different explanation, which is, let's say, for example, you could have two possibilities. Let's say, for example, you wrote in the shtar the date, let's say Tosfos says Gimel Nissen or Zion Nissen or whatever, and then you look up on the calendar and it turns out that year Gimel Nissen was Shabbos. What about Yom Kippur? Could be the same kind of thing. You wrote, let's say, Monday of the second week of Tishrei, like in modern terms, you might write, let's say, Monday of Parshat Hazidu or something, and then you look up on the calendar and find that was Yom Kippur. So those are the
points. Why did you write that date?
Because after that's the question. So you didn't actually write that shtar that day, Bepashtus. So
right.
you were careless. Shtar ma'ucha huva kosher divir Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda would say this is considered shtar ma'ucha. It's a post-dated shtar. In other words, now the Rashbam talks about, obviously it wasn't written that day. You could think maybe it was predated, in which case it would be possible. No reason to think it's predated without any kind of proof. We will assume that it's post-dated. We will assume that the shtar was in fact written on Erev Yom Kippur, let's say, and by mistake they wrote, the shtar could have been written a month earlier or something, and they wrote Monday of Parshas Hazinu, and it didn't occur to them that that's going to end up being Yom Kippur, let's say, or the same thing with Shabbos.
Like
therefore, the kosher.
Yeah,
the secular calendar idea is also.
You could have written a month of Shabbos.
Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky asks that question. Why don't we assume it was just written Motzei Shabbos? He leaves it Tzorachiyun, but he discusses the possibilities. He discusses maybe Taka in those days, the Goyim held as far as their dates, the same as we do. Maybe a date was considered to begin at night and go through Shkia the next day, like we do in our calendar. If you write Shoy, yeah, No, you could have conceivably that you wrote Shoy. For example, they did that in your Shalai, like Gemara mentioned. Yeah, yeah. And you could also have, let's say, with a two-day Yom Tov, yeah, whatever, you have possibilities. Anyway, so Rabbi Yehuda says it's no problem with the shtar ma'ucher and it's kosher. Rabbi Yossi posel, whereas Rabbi Yossi says the shtar is, Rabbi Yossi says it's posel, which in fact is not just Rabbi Yossi says in this particular case, dated Shabbos Yom Kippur. He would say in general that a post-dated shtar is posel, for reasons which we'll see on Amud Beis. So that's why this relates to the previous discussion, because we're going to discuss the matter of a shayla. So Rabbi Yehuda says to Rabbi Yossi, what do you mean you pass on to shtar? Such a case actually came to you when you were the dayan in Sipori, a post-dated shtar, and you said it's kosher. Amalei, so Rabbi Yossi says, it was clearly post-dated. Amalei, so Rabbi Yossi answers, sheikh sharti, bozeh sharti. No, the kind of thing that I was makshir was fine, was the case we were talking about where it's dated Shabbos or it's dated Yom Kippur, where the shtar itself, as soon as you look at the date, you can obviously see that it wasn't written on that day. I didn't
because
it was Shabbos, Yom Kippur, and it obviously wasn't written that day. As opposed to what's the case where I would say it's possible is a regular case of a post-dated shtar. You have a shtar that's dated Tuesday of Parshas Vayera, which is definitely a weekday, and there's no clear evidence whether it was actually written on Tuesday of Parshas Vayera or whether it was written a month or 2 months or a year or whatever earlier. That is what I would say is possible. Next question is, then what's the argument? Rabbi Yehuda is also talking about a shtar dated Shabbos Yom Kippur. What do you mean Rabbi Yehuda is postal, if we're saying he's not postal in that case? Amar Pedas, so the Pedas says it's like this. You have to understand the machlokes as follows. Hakol Moedim, everybody agrees, both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yehuda, she'im huzkaktu lo'y nosesh shtar, if we, the Beis Din, checked into the date of the shtar, and when we started looking at a calendar, we found out that the date written in the shtar turns out to be Shabbos or Yom Kippur. Both Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda would agree that such a thing is considered a shtar kosher. It's a shtar me'ucher. If the date in the shtar is such that once you check into it, then you find that it's Shabbos or Yom Kippur. Then for sure, that's the equivalent of the shtar actually being written. That's the equivalent of the shtar actually saying, in so many words, this shtar was not written on the date that's written in.
You don't write generally on the shtar?
You generally write on the shtar of the date. No, that's the thing. But you have possibilities. Again, like Tosva said, you could write, like the Rosh Hashanah said, you could write a secular date and you didn't pay attention. Or it could be like Tosva was saying, you wrote a Hebrew date or you wrote a day of the week or whatever and you didn't notice. I'll tell you, by the way, as an interesting side thing, we're getting close to the end of our time, but I'll tell you an interesting side thing. I don't know how many people over here have heard of the Cherson of Gnita. This is a collection of letters that was found in Cherson in Russia just about 100 years ago. They're letters, they're copies, not originals, they're copies of letters from the Baal Shem Tev, and Rav Adam Baal Shem, and Mizrachi Magid, and Chabraya. This is called the Cherson of Gnita. Now, what happened when it was first found? It was very obvious soon enough that they weren't originals. There's no question they were copies. But most people who looked into it argued that they're out-and-out forgeries. The originals of these letters were never written by the people who says somebody wrote them. On the other hand, the Deborah Shab, who got a hold of most of them, eventually one of the siddim at that time, bought most of them and sold them to the Deborah Shab. Not sold them, gave them as a gift to the Deborah Shab. So the Deborah Shab, and then the Friedrich Rebbe, and also our Rebbe, they all held that no, the content of the letters themselves is genuine. There's mistakes. There's lots of mistakes in them, but basically the content is genuine. They're copies, and then there's a whole thing. There were stamps of them indicating that they originally came from Rabbi Sura Luzhiner. So the Rebbe explains in one of his letters on the subject that what happened was when Rabbi Sura was arrested, then all of his ksavim were taken away by the Russian government. Eventually, they managed to get him out. Eventually, they managed to sneak him out of Russia into Austria. But of course, he had to leave. You know, the ksavim were left behind over there in the government archives. So eventually they got people over there to sneak into the archives and make copies of them to leave so that the shelves don't look empty, and that way they could return the originals to him. Anyway, one of the arguments that was brought to bear. So that right. No, we're not talking Xerox. We're talking a handwritten copy. This is before Xerox machine.
Before
Xerox, this is 180 years ago. Anyway. One of the arguments, those who hold they were forged, one of the arguments they use is almost all the letters are dated by a day of the week and a parasha, like Yom Beis parashas Va'era or whatever. And they pointed out there are a few of them where it turns out, like in Our Gemara over here, that turns out to be on a Shabbos or a Yom Kippur or something. So on the other hand, the answer of our rebellion would be okay. When the copyists over there were in a hurry, they were just trying to leave something to fool the Russians. You know, they don't need to copy word for word, especially it's hard to read old manuscripts and whatnot. Yes, in some places they may have made mistakes like that. Doesn't mean that the content is not genuine.
they use a different calendar. So let them.
No, that's the Jewish calendar. We're talking about these where these letters were dated, the Jewish date. Yeah. Okay.
We never used the different calendar.
He's talking about the Julian versus Gregorian calendar, but that's the Jewish calendar. Anyway, let's get back to the Gemara.
We
haven't changed our calendar. No. So, so everybody agrees, if we check into the date in the shtar, it turns out that the date on the shtar turns out to be Shabbos or Yom Kippur, then everybody would agree, even Rabbi Yossi, that is definitely a shtar mo'ucho, because just by looking at the date, you can see that it's a shtar mo'ucho, and therefore it's kosher. The question is, when does Rabbi Yossi say it's possible? When you have a regular shtar mo'ucher, where just you have the date is on a weekday, but you don't know was it actually written on that weekday or was it post-dated? Rabbi Yehuda l'taimei, therefore Rabbi Yehuda is going according to his svara. Drama ein kos ben shover. Rabbi Yehuda, like he said in our Mishnah, holds you don't write a shover. Therefore, there's no possibility of any problem that could come out from a post-dated shtar. Whereas Rabbi Yossi holds, since there can be a case you write a shover, like we said in our Mishnah, if you allow a post-dated document, then you have a problem. Because you have a problem. Because what's going to happen? The shover, therefore, is going to be the malva is going to claim, let's say, that he lost his shtar, or let's say part of the milva was paid off or whatever, and you're going to have a shtar, you're going to write a shover according to Rabbi Yossi. Later on, at some point, the malva can take out the shtar and say, hey, but the shtar was written after the shover. Look, the date on it is later. So Rabbi Yossi, therefore, has to be consistent with his opinion and say that such a thing is possible. When the shtar turns out to be dated on Shabbos or Yom Kippur, there's no question that it's post-dated, then Rabbi Yossi is saying, if you bring out the shtar, and against it the loiver brings out a shover, you, the malva, are not going to be believed to say that the shtar post-dates that shover, because of necessity the shtar was obviously post-dated, therefore we don't know where it is in relation to the shover. But any other time, it could be.
So
that's the thing. So that's why Rabbi Yossi is saying if the date of the shtar in and of itself does not show whether it's dated on the date it was written or whether it's post-dated, then it can't be a valid shtar. Because in case a shover has to be written for whatever reason, then you're going to have a problem. Whereas Rabbi Hodo, who says you don't write a shover anyway, says there's no problem with that. A shtar chayv can be post-dated. So therefore it doesn't matter whether it's obviously post-dated or whether it's not obviously post-dated. Either way, it's kosher.
The problem arises when you have a shtar that doesn't fall on Shabbos and that is after the shover.
That's Rabbi Yossi's point. That's Rabbi Yossi's point. That's why he says that a shtar me'ucher is kosher. It's possible. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda, who doesn't hold tosef and shover in the first place, says that it's fine. They don't both agree. They're both going according to their own shittus. Do you write a shover or do you not write a shover? They only agree in a shtar where the date itself demonstrates it was written on Shabbos or Yom Kippur or Yom Tov or what have you, because since it obviously wasn't written on that day, there's no question that it was post-dated, and therefore whenever you come to Beis Din, it will be immediately obvious that it was post-dated, and therefore, yeah. The Rashbam, by the way, mentions an explanation, which actually comes from Rabbeinu Gershom, but the Rashbam strongly disagrees with, which says that the Gemara is making a distinction whether that statement is written in the shtar or not. Does it actually say in the statement that we checked into the date and found it to be on Shabbos through Yom Kippur? Right? The Rashbam strongly disagrees with that. He says that you don't need it. He calls it Hevel V'Leitzon. First of all, he says then the Lashon of the Gemara is not accurate. The Gemara should have said it matters whether that's written in the shtar or not. And second of all, he says, what's the difference? If you can look at the calendar and find that the date is Shabbos or Yom Kippur, it doesn't matter whether it's written in the shtar that it is Shabbos or Yom Kippur or not.